Welcome to Dead Pilot Society, the show that takes comedy pilots from A-list writers that were sold and developed at networks but never produced, and gives them the table reads they never got a chance to have. I am Andrew Reich, the creator and host of Dead Pilot Society, and this is the after show for Middle of Somewhere, pilot written by yours truly, along with Trey Crowder, Corey Ryan Forrester, and Drew Morgan. Oh, man, this was so much fun. Because I genuinely love these guys, and their bond with each other is so strong, and I often find it kind of moving, to be honest. And we got to do this in person, which was, I could have cried just to be in a room with people. So even though some more of that's been going on lately, it's still, the novelty hasn't worn off. This isn't really as much an interview as the four of us just kind of remembering the crazy development process of this pilot, starting with the fact that the network that bought this show did not like the main idea of the show we pitched. You'll hear all about that, how we handled that, all the different permutations it went through, some false starts that we absolutely loved that were fun to talk about, the sort of what ifs. Like I said last week, these guys are the authors of the Liberal Redneck Manifesto. Maybe you know them from their YouTube videos, their Comedy Central videos, or their Well-Read, that's Well-R-E-D, Red Comedy Tours, or the Well-Read podcast. If you don't know these guys, you got to go online right now and check out some of their stuff on YouTube, on Twitter. These guys are really important voices in the culture. I'm just going to say it. And we get into the difficulties they face trying to get authentic Southern characters on TV. And they're still trying. So, all right, here is my conversation with Trey Crowder, Corey, the Buttercream Dream Forrester, and Drew Morgan.
Prepare yourself for the greatest pro wrestling podcast spectacular known as Tights at Five. Backdropping audio showcase that helps you understand the world of pro wrestling with a lot of love and no toxic masculinity. Featuring host Danielle Radford.
Time to kick butt and chew gum, and I'm all out of butts.
Lindsay Cal.
I'm a brutal Brit, and my fists were made to punch and hit.
And Hal Lublin.
I was doing the voiceover this whole time.
Hear us talk about pro wrestling's greatest triumphs and failures.
And make fun of its weekly absurdities.
On the Perfect Wrestling Podcast.
Tights and Fights. Every Saturday on Maximum Fun.
I think I'm going to start this. I'm going to start the history of this pilot, of my own history with this pilot. Okay. Which goes back before we ever met.
Okay.
Because
a better time in your life, I assume.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, Trump gets elected, and Hollywood's response is everyone has to read a Hillbilly Elegy immediately.
Yeah.
And try and get the rights and adapt it. That was like, yep. Everyone was just kind of suddenly aware that there were human beings that didn't live in New York or Los Angeles. Yeah. And we had to like try and exploit them.
Yes.
And figure out how to monetize that.
Yeah.
So I was in a deal at Disney, and everyone's sending me a Hillbilly Elegy, which I read and did not like.
Yeah.
But what I did like was Trey's videos. So I called up my execs, and they said they were trying to make a deal with you, and it was between ABC or Disney, or whatever, and Warner Brothers. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, Trey, you went with Warner Brothers and did a show with my friend John Enbaum.
Yes. Well, actually, at that point you're talking about, that was my second deal with Warner Brothers, both with John, though. So, like, that was part of the decision for me, was like I had already been with Warner Brothers and I just stayed with them as opposed to going over there. So
right. It may have been in between. I think it was like you had done one with John that
I had worked,
and I think that's when I was trying to, and then
yes,
you ended up doing another one.
That also didn't go.
That
yes.
also didn't.
Yes, correct.
And I had, because, you know, radical honesty on this podcast, I had a really bad idea of a show that I was thinking of.
Apparently so did we.
Yeah, apparently, yeah. There's many bad ideas. I think my idea that I think I even pitched him. I was just like, okay, it was so on the nose and terrible, but I'm still going to share. It was like, it's a show about a Hollywood writer who is writing a sitcom like with Southern characters because Trump got elected and everyone's trying to like do a show with Southern characters all of a sudden, but the show, it feels really inauthentic. And so they want to pair him with an actual Southerner to help him write it, which would have been Trey. Yeah. And then it's like a buddy comedy.
I mean, I'd be into that.
These two.
I actually kind of like, I like meta shit.
No,
like
me
that.
Too. Yeah. I would be into the non-network version of that where you can like have real fights and real conversations, because those fights would be authentic to what those two people would fight about.
And that in my mind, I was just like, I'll just meet Trey. We'll argue about stuff. Right. And then we'll just put that in.
So you
in
can't do blackface in y'all's business no more? Like, that's out. Like, Al Jolson, he didn't matter. Okay. All right. I mean, whatever. Okay, that's what we're doing.
Jazz Singer wasn't a hit. All right. Yeah, I'm sorry. Okay. So I think I pitched that idea and they didn't like it. And anyway, and then you did another show with John that didn't go. And then the next step of this, I guess, is Ruben Fleischer's company.
Yep.
Said to me, they said, hey, we're all in deals at Disney and we've got a few things. And one of them is Trey and Corey and Drew. And I got very excited that I was finally going to actually get to meet you guys. And I listened to the audiobook of the book.
Better or worse than Hillbilly Elegy?
Oh, so much better. So much better.
If you had just read it, I don't know if you'd feel that way. But I think with the audio, it takes us over the top.
Oh, my God. The audio.
Yeah, it's the way to
anyone listening, you got to listen to the audio.
Well, we put way too much of our own vernacular in there. If it's not on audio, it's like, what?
I know. I don't know what the print experience of all that skew and all, like, how you would even understand.
Yeah, we went back and forth with our editor a lot. And I mean, she was great and, you know, conceded so many times where she would be like, hey, you have a typo in here. And it's like, no, that's it's spelled that way because that's how we want them to say it. Yeah, you
in
can't.
Their mind,
in their mind, we want them. She's like, all right.
quick backstory with Ruben. He told us, and I'm reading a little bit into this, but he came to see us at Largo, right?
Yeah, yep.
And he said his mom sent him.
Yep.
And it was, to me,
it's
like,
so funny.
Maybe I'm Hollywooding it up a little bit, but to me, this guy was like, all right, mom, just leave me alone. I'll go watch The Rednecks and see what this is about. And then we crushed so hard that he was like, all right, man, I might be able to exploit these particular Rednecks.
It's also so typical of like our fan base and like an experience we would have. They were like, Ruben Fleischer, hip Hollywood director's coming to see you. Really? Yeah, his mom's a big fan.
Yeah, right.
So I don't know. So that's okay. So that's how you hooked up with Ruben. Mm-hmm. And it was just Ruben went, or Eli and Dave?
They might have been there. I don't remember, but it was
before even.
I just remember Ruben walking up to us after the show and just, you know, like, hey, I'm Ruben. And we were talking to him for a minute. And then it sort of dawned on, like,
Dave was probably on the salt flats or some shit.
Yeah. Shooting arrows at women and burning man.
So these people we're talking to. So Ruben Fleischer, some of you may know, is a big Hollywood director of
Zombieland movies.
Zombieland, Venom. Yeah.
We've been making rich Hollywood douchebag jokes before we got on mic, but like, what about us? We probably did meet Eli first, but in our mind, we're like, Ruben Fleischer.
Right.
Yeah.
And Eli works for Ruben, was obviously much less interesting to the
youth. Yes.
And,
we love you, Eli.
And Dave Bernad, who's also works for Ruben. Those are, that's his team. So, okay. So you guys, you connect with Ruben and his company, and then what happened? Because I don't even know this. Like, did you meet a bunch of people when you met me? Were you talking to a bunch of other?
No, we didn't. I think it was one of those situations where I'm fairly certain that obviously we would have had the option, but like they, I mean, from my experience, and I could be completely wrong, but it was just like they brought you up. We were like, oh, word. And then saw all the bona fides and were like, well, yeah. I mean, of course.
Also, when we met with you, I don't know if you remember, but you rejected like our first three pitches. And I think we
that
liked
that. That means a lot to us.
No, I think we liked that because it was like, but then your eyes lit up when we started the thing they wouldn't let us do in the end. But your eyes lit up and it was like, oh, there's something really here. This isn't just somebody who's cashing in on the country train or whatever.
Well, that's another thing too. Like, we had met a lot of, and still continue to always meet a lot of these people who, like, you can just tell they're interested in that they could do something with us, but not interested in what we want to do at all. They're just like, ching, ching, oh, yeah, different set, whatever. Of Southern, yeah, yeah, it's the same as the Midwest. And you just were not like that at all. And we were like, oh, my God, this is awesome.
I don't even remember those. I don't remember the ideas that I shot down.
It might have just been one or two, to be fair.
I don't remember them either.
The boat? Didn't we do the boat with him?
I don't remember. I just remember.
Yes.
When we brought up the golf course, that's when he like sort of keyed in on it. But was that meeting in person?
No.
I didn't think. We were on the road, right? Yeah. And it was like a.
And it was not. It wouldn't have been Zoom because none of us had ever heard of
it. Yeah, it was like a Skype. It was like a Skype meeting.
It was a Skype. Yeah, I remember.
But I just remember. Yeah, they. We got hooked up with Ruben's company and all that, and then they brought you up, and we had that meeting with you, and it just went really well, and that's all there was to it. Like, yeah, we didn't – because with Warner Brothers, the first time around, I did the whole, like, you know,
water bottle.
Speed, with a bunch of different people, and ended up with Rob Thomas and John Imbaum. But with you, we just met with you, and it just went well, so we just rolled.
Side note, Trey's got a huge vocabulary. What's the word – when Zoom has become that for me, like Kleenex?
An eponym.
Oh, there you go.
Like Kleenex.
Thank you, because I wouldn't have had it.
Kleenex.
Xerox, Kleenex. Yeah, that's an
Dumpster is one of those. Do you know that?
I didn't know.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Dumpster's a brand name?
Yep. Originally, those things, whatever, you know, those like, massive trash. I don't even know what to call it.
We can still say facial tissue.
Yeah, right.
But we don't even know another word for a dumpster other than a dumpster.
A bin? A big, large
receptacle?
Yeah, I guess that would be it.
Sorry, I didn't mean to aside us.
No, it's important. Now everyone learned a little something. So we had that Skype, and I think I do remember there's a couple things. God, I'm trying. It's so hard for me not to start doing some half-assed Southern accent when I'm around.
Please do.
No, it's bad. It's like when you order sushi in a Japanese accent.
Yeah.
It's like, what did I just do? I just talked to the sushi chef in a Japanese. Like, I didn't mean to do that.
My mother-in-law says vinaigrette. Only that.
That's funny.
I love that. That's like, it's not even close to right. It's like, they're not even the right language. It's just, so, but I do definitely remember you guys talking about the golf courses, like these redneck golf courses in your towns, and that people fished in the in the water hazards, and there and you couldn't have glass out there because
you couldn't have glass bottles because the boys like to play barefoot, which is an actual rule on a sign.
Mine had cows in the pond. The water hazards had was a real cow pond.
Yeah, and there's lots of there are snakes.
Yeah,
and
just ate up with snakes.
And then I think that's what I was hoping, you know. We've been talking to you, just get that. That just felt like, oh, that's, I haven't seen that. That feels so real. You guys kind of, you all lit up talking about it too. It was just like you had such affection for those places.
Yeah.
And that just felt like what a fun hangout to just like be in that little clubhouse of this golf course. So we, okay. So at that point, I think, you know, I was just like, I'm in. You guys, I guess, were in.
Oh, yeah.
And then it took, I can't remember if we were remote for still a little while or we started passionate.
I definitely was remote at least for a minute. I think because everybody else was here and then y'all just had me like on a computer in the middle of a desk. And every now and then I'd just be like, hey, y'all remember me? And
we stayed in Airbnbs together a lot, though.
We did. I just feel
I didn't come here till January 2019.
I feel like I didn't come out here and stay in an Airbnb until the money was on the table. Yeah. And I was like, okay.
I think it may have been Trey, just me and Trey in the room and you guys like on Skype.
Yeah.
And just sort of fleshing out that world of that golf course. And I remember there was that girl, I love that character. There was like a kid, like a delinquent kid.
Yeah.
Who was like a prodigy.
Yep. DJ. I don't remember the name.
RJ.
That might be right.
Yeah, because it was something.
Ronnie Van Zandt Jr. Ronnie Van, because his
somebody was going to have sex with his aunt.
Ronnie Van Zandt.
RV.
And by the way, I know that sounds very stupid. I need everyone to know that we thought that was the most brilliant joke that had ever been written.
I tell everybody about that joke.
Ronnie Van's aunt was the perfect example of the kind of joke that fell completely flat.
Yes, that's so true.
That tickled us all so much and did not really work.
I was so naive. We don't want to name execs' names, but there was one exec was from Louisiana. And I remember in my head being like, she's going to go to bat for that one.
Oh, yeah.
For like, sure. That's, she'll be the nope. That's a good nope. Didn't say no.
Yeah. I think there was from Louisiana, but also probably born in like 1995. Yep. I had no idea.
Who right. Yep. Right. Right. Right.
So that was the problem there. There's geography, but there's also a generational right. issue with that joke.
Not if you're really from the South, Andrew. Right. Damn it.
But so, yeah, I think like, you know, we pitched, we got that pitch together, that whole world of that place. And it was great because I feel like it was, you know, for me in my position supervising, it's just like, I just want to draw out like, what's the real stuff? I was like trying to just always get you guys to like paint the pictures. I don't know what these places are like. And it was just like, you guys just have... You know, it's where you're from. You're not yeah. faking it. You weren't making stuff up. There was just always stuff that was.
Yeah, that like, was always the problem, too, is that they would like, we would say some stuff that was like literally word for word pulled from his sister or pulled from a real experience. And they would be like, you're going to have to dial that shit back a little bit. Yeah. Like that. Hell, we did kind of a little bit.
Yeah, I call that the Boomhauer effect. There's a reason they had to make Boomhauer a cartoon because nobody would have bought it otherwise. But, you know, they're very real people.
Right. You guys, it's, yeah.
Oh, for sure.
It's like Wally in middle in this one, mm-hmm. but and so we went and we made our rounds and we pitched that, which was, you know, it's always fun for me to not be the one. Most of it was not on my shoulders. It was just like you guys telling stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'll actually love the pitch process because it's just a performance. You know, yeah.
I mean, you guys are. Suited to it. Like me as a writer, it's always a little bit like I'm putting on a fake kind of thing to do yeah. it. But, you know, you guys are performers. So yeah. I felt like those pitches were great. And then there was that moment where we heard from ABC, like, they like it. They, you know, they want to buy it. They just don't like the golf course.
Right. But which, just, if you could just take everything yeah. about it.
Yeah, we had pitched a, like, redneck golf course show.
Yeah.
And then they're like, yeah, we love it. We're in, but could we just maybe get rid of the golf course? It's like, sure, but I don't know what.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what that is yeah. now. Because that was the whole thing.
Right? Like, we're in those pitches like, oh, they bought us.
Right.
We're great performers. And then it's so invalidating as, like, a writer.
Well, I mean, yeah. way though it was because all they liked was you.
Yeah, right. No, I yeah. mean, yeah. In hindsight, it's like, wow, that is crazy. Like we sold a thing that they didn't like to them. You know, like they didn't like it, but they're like, but we'll fucking take it. I don't know.
Yeah. Nailed your character, boy.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
But it was like a parody of a Hollywood moment.
Yeah,
was,
for sure. Right.
Oh yeah.
We like everything about it except everything.
The primary thing about yeah, it.
I mean,
yeah.
pretty much almost every aspect that we pitched. Was this golf course?
It had right. to be.
Was the thing.
Because right. that was our thing to them, was one of the initial reasons that we, because somebody had said, well, we don't want it to be a workplace comedy. And we're like, okay, well, and one of the things we said was like, well, Always Sunny is not a workplace comedy, but they've got the bar to hang out with. And we were like, because you got to understand where we're from. The only way a large group of people would ever just hang out during the day together is if they're working together in some way. Because in the South, people don't just sit around the coffee shop. People don't
unless
just
they're
like
old.
They, unless they're old, right? But right. like these people are. There's going to have to be a reason that they're not just all fucking about all the time, and they just couldn't, you know. Yeah. Whatever.
Speaking of old, if you ever want to do Papaws at Hardee's, we got some ideas. Yeah. Do you guys remember Where We Were? Because that's kind of a Hollywood parody, too. We were at that show in Virginia that had literally a Robert E. Lee, like, huge mural.
That was Marion, Virginia?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we were backstage when you called us, and... Did we Dude. Take our shirts off?
Yeah.
Or did we just have
no. Them? I think you already had yours off.
Sure,
because no, I mean, you did. Because as soon as you get out of the audience's view yeah, off the theater right. stage, you always take your shirt off. And I mean, I'm never too far behind. But yeah, we took our shirt off and made.
There was a.
Kid that worked there, and we were just like fucking
he
rubbing
just took
our
his shirt off.
We were just like, yeah, we were just grinding our wingies on his butt. It's like, woo! We didn't even know his
we
name.
Full Hollywood started grinding on a kid. We say kid, he was definitely of age.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah, no, it was fine what we did. Like, yeah. But it could have been a real Hollywood story.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
But yeah, had a theater with a mural of Robert E. Lee performing it.
We even had a country club. It yeah. was even.
It was right there.
The title was right there.
Yeah.
So that was the call where it was just like good news, bad news, kind of, right? Mm-hmm. We sold it. I don't know what we sold.
Right. Yeah.
But we.
Because we got to start over, and basically. Start over.
And that was the first thing that I'd ever sold. Like Trey had before, but I had. So, like, I was freaking out. Like, all I knew was, I don't know what's going to happen after this, but I got to this, so awesome. You know,
we're Disney, gonna, ABC.
Yeah, like
these are, old show.
These are yeah. things I know. Yeah, these are words yeah. I've heard before. Right. This sounds pretty sweet, so yeah.
And then, you know, obviously it was kind of, because it was, you know, they were our only option. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a case where we had, like, lots of, you know, right. networks, you know, interested. So it was clear. It was just like, all right, well, we'll figure this out. Right. And then I'm trying to remember. I mean, I definitely remember the first thing we landed on that we liked.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I want to talk about because I still fucking love it.
Me too. Right. I've been thinking about it for the past day since we did the reboot. Yeah, me too.
But I guess we just sort of started talking about the other elements, you know, because the characters were still... you guys, versions of you guys,
right.
we knew we had that. And I think we had probably already talked about the female characters well,
yeah.
as versions of, you know, Trey's sister, you know, Corey, your wife.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we're
very lucky in the regard that none of those three people need to be embellished hardly even at all.
Right.
Like, we already had it ready to go. Like, yeah. my wife's a teacher. She drinks sometimes, you know. We can do a lot with that.
When she's awake.
Yeah.
So we had characters.
Right.
But we really didn't know what the heck situation we were going to put them in and what was going to be the home base.
Right.
And then I think it was probably a lot of me just saying, like, tell me stories
right.
about your towns and things that, you know, you do that are unique to the towns. And then it probably was... Chickamauga, right?
Had yeah. to be, yeah. I think.
Yeah, I mean, I know that I started going on and on about Ricky at, like, my High Point golf course and how I think he had literally just died. Like, I think that in real life, Ricky had just died, and maybe that's when we started batting around the whole, like, what if somebody, like... Oh, wait, no.
We're past the
We're past
course.
That. Hold on
They've already shot down the
yeah,
golf course.
No,
we're talking about the reenactment.
I was, yeah. But I think, yeah. No, you're right.
We're not past trying that, but we're past the inception of
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
the
yeah,
inception
yeah.
of was doing that at the golf course.
Yes.
So we had to get rid of the golf course.
Right.
But we can keep the reenactment.
I'm trying. Yeah.
The reenactment still was in the golf course.
Yeah. Yes, it was. And that came from just, yeah, my hell, I had a bit about it at the time, and I probably just did the bit for you at the table. And, yeah, because reenactments are wild. And, yeah, but at the time
Civil War reenactments, because yeah. you know, Corey's town, it was like a site of a big Civil War battle.
Those are the only type of plays that aren't gay that you're allowed, that you're allowed to do. That's a fine version of theater.
Yeah.
Macbeth.
So we started talking about this idea of a reenactment, and I think, and so part of it was that they do the reenactment as if the South had won
yeah.
the battle, which yeah. is which, historically which, inaccurate.
Right. Right. Yeah. They all, I think the idea was the town every year does that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And yeah, which is not historically accurate. Would, and then we were gonna.
I would like to say for anyone listening, my actual town of Chickamauga, it would be historically accurate because the South did win that particular battle. But in this fiction, I don't want any yeah. history buff to be yeah. like, I thought you were from Chickamauga. They did win that yeah. battle. But right. yes, in this
Corey still yeah. thinks his dad might listen to a podcast. He's not. Let it go.
And we were gonna
try to. I don't
know
the initial golf course thing, but the one we ended up landing on, you were going to. Correct that.
And yes,
right. I'm now the city. My character's just gotten a city manager job, and one of the things I was going to try to do is make that historic. Like, we can keep doing it, but
yeah,
it's going to be
like,
it's going to be
right?
historically accurate.
Yeah.
So we got to change that.
Right. And the mayor's like, no. At first, right,
and we pushed back against it, and then
you
I end
were
up
play.
I end up finding out
you didn't want to play. You didn't want to participate,
right.
but you agreed to participate. And play the Southern general
with the condition,
that I forfeit
and lose.
Lose.
Right.
But then,
right.
And then Drew's playing the Northern general. But then Drew
they get real competitive.
Sleeps with your sister.
And I find that
the
out.
Whole time
has
that
been
point.
The whole time, right. You
yeah.
have been the whole time. You find out.
Yeah.
During the battle,
right. yeah.
and at that point, you're like, "Fuck historical accuracy!"
Yeah, yeah.
The South by the rise
again. That's so funny.
It's hilarious.
It's so fucking funny.
It was so. It was one of those story. Like, I remember pitching it to friends. Like, listen, I don't usually pitch, like, you know, the story outline to friends, but I was just like, I think that we just hit on a really
yeah.
fun.
It was. I remember almost being scared that it was like, and I know how this is about to sound, but like too good for a pilot. Like, where the fuck are we going to go from here? Like, how are we going to top this reenactment that Trey, would you like to go over?
Fret not. No,
yeah, don't worry. Would you like to go over what my character's situation was?
Yes.
He was, because I'm feeling really left out here. I'm not getting a lot of lines.
So Gers banging my sister, I found out, and that's how that all plays out. Corey, meanwhile, in the reenactment, is playing the role of Mud Boy, who was a real life, like, disabled dude who rode a donkey and delivered water to the soldiers on the battlefield or something like that.
For the South specifically, just, right?
Yeah, highbrow, man.
Yeah, you know, listen. We
Which
know
was historically accurate.
That's what's crazy. It's like, this kid was mentally handicapped, but he really, really liked slavery.
So, yeah, they didn't go for none of that shit.
They were like, so have you ever thought about maybe putting in a golf course or something like that?
Yeah, that was rough, because I feel like we had recovered from the blow of to lose the golf course, something we'd spent all these weeks on. We'd come up with something we loved, and it got shot down before we could even pitch it to the network.
The studio shot that down.
As I remember, Ruben did not really exactly back us up.
No, like, that's also true.
It was,
I think they all just thought it was just like too much, didn't they? Confederate soldiers and all that is just too much.
Because it was beginning. I don't think Charlottesville had happened. Yeah.
I don't know if it had or not.
I can't remember if Charlottesville had happened yet, but it was still, even so, it was obviously monuments were coming down, and it just felt like too hot for network TV, I guess, though it was, I don't know.
You may have said this, like, just in general, but it might have been Ruben. I feel like somebody said, this is a very Always Sunny type plot, and it's hilarious, but we're not pitching to FX.
Right.
Yeah.
And which was, again, was a huge, huge bummer, because... I mean, yeah, just us talking about that right now, like, God dang. Yeah. Like, if I ever am in a position to where I'm fine and I can just throw some money at a thing, we're just all getting together and just shooting that pilot just for the hell of it.
Yeah, because there were so many great details, because you guys just, you know, you knew all the, just how seriously people take these reenactments.
Yeah.
And that was just providing comedy, like, right and left for, you know, the people who were really into it. And Trey just being kind of, like, reluctantly dragged into doing this. And it was just, like, people had, you know, for me, when you're coming up with a story, you need, like, okay, do people have strong attitudes? Do people really want something? Like, is there other reveals? Like, it just felt like it had everything we needed. I knew we could write that, and it would be great. So that got shot down.
Yeah.
And then, was there even one more false start?
I don't know. I can't remember if there was a whole other different story. I think there were different, like, elements of the, like, at one point we were talking about doing a little more with, like, there was a yoga class and everything. Like, we have Katie being, like, a yoga instructor or whatever in the version that we have, but for a while there, she was going to, like, put on a yoga class or something.
At a gun range.
Yeah, she
had a gun range.
She ended up at the gun range, right? Because there was, also getting into the places that are just like, no, yoga's a religion.
Oh, yeah. Right.
And you know, the churches, like, wouldn't let her do it at the churches because it's religion, which was also felt like, you know, I like that reenactment. I like that it was getting into some of the realer stuff. I think all of us wanted to, like, get into some of the issues in a network-friendly way.
Yeah, which is the show pretty difficult.
Be about something.
Yeah, right.
And then, that ended up, like, that they're at at Ballard, who was probably already a part of this, I think.
Yeah.
And Ballard was someone you worked with?
I worked with my old day job,
And he was, like, he was Marine gun nut.
Ex-Marine, hardcore gun nut. Yeah, there's a scene in there where the character has his, like, 7-year-old granddaughter shooting an assault rifle. And that happened in real life. But it wasn't an AR, but it was like a Glock 9 or something, you know, just this little pink-clad princess just popping off at the range while our pop stands beside her going, yeah, get it, there you go. And he was, like, showing that around work all proudly, like, look at my baby girl, you know. She's just...
I think so many of the things that probably seem like, oh, those are the far-fetched things they just made up, are the most real things.
Absolutely.
Ballard happens to be black. Trey's like the character and who is based on, and I think we left that out. And that's what I think a lot of people are like, okay, you forced this character to be, but it's like, no, not where we're from.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing that made him, you know, that obviously makes him stand out. Like, it's not like, of course, black dudes are absolutely allowed to be gun right-wing gun nuts if they want to. That's just not the thing you see a lot.
But real-life Balor's not otherwise right-wing.
Right. He's just military guy.
Ex-military gun guy. But he ain't like...
He ain't
a MAGA dude or nothing.
Wasn't it
like a big thing for him when he dropped his NRA membership or something like that?
I don't know if he dropped it or not.
He decided not to, but he was upset about the whole
thing. I just remember him telling me once, he was like, I don't know how this got brought up, whatever. He talked about guns all the time, and he said something like, he was like, Trey, let me tell you something right now. The NRA is one of the most systemically racist organizations in this country. And I've been a card-carrying member for 35 years. It's like, and here's why. And it was just like, because we can't let them take our second, you know. Yeah, he went into that whole thing.
Right.
But that, the raps are real.
Oh, the weight loss raps, very real.
That's my favorite thing that remained.
The raps?
Because it's just so.
The patty walk.
Yeah, also sure. real, yeah.
Also real.
But that raps thing, and it's not just necessarily raps, but that whole culture of during the pandemic, it actually got worse because everybody had to start supplementing their income from home. So like now the rap stuff and like, you know, what used to just be Tupperware and Mary Kay is now that model is for anything in the South. But the most ridiculous is the weight loss.
Yeah, I don't know if they're still out there doing it with the raps or not. But at the time we were writing this, it was very much a. Like one of those things, one of the fads.
But it changes every few years, but the culture remains, and that's why I was so glad that it remained in the script, and that's why it's my favorite thing, is the way Paige's character fights for it.
Right.
Because, like, I've been doing comedy a long time, and I started out there, and I had people not say anything about my religious jokes, not say anything about so many offensive things I had done on Facebook back in the day. And then I had people, like one of my childhood best friend's moms unfollowed me, like, sent me a message, because raps is how she makes her money. It's like, if you go after somebody money, right. Now it's like you're attacking them kind of thing. And so anyway, that's a big thing. The multi-level marketing is a big thing.
Yeah. And that, and you know, it also reminds me, you know, just I remember and talking about Drew, your lawyering days.
Yeah.
And I had to, and that was a big deal with RJ, I guess. Or you know, Ronnie
RV.
RV.
Yeah.
Because I think you were gonna. So that was always all these things, you know, were like floating around and sometimes played a bigger part. I think there were versions of this where there was like you representing someone was a bigger part of the pilot. But then I definitely also remember that when the paddy walk, which I feel like is your wife's town, like then is that where that was from?
No, we did that. They did that in Salina, in my hometown.
In your hometown.
They might still do. I don't know. I can't remember. But
okay. And that was. You know, because a lot of what we did was just sit in a room and I just like tried to get you guys to tell stories.
To remember stuff.
What other insane shit do I not know about? Yeah.
One more layer of trauma down is the good stuff. Right.
And talking about that event where people place bets on, that cow shit bingo.
Mm. Well, there's other versions. There's chicken chip bingo, which is the same thing, but with a chicken. I mean, there's like a few different versions of that. Random aside, our buddy Denver comedian Sam Talent wrote this great book about a road dog comedian that was, you know, pretty well received called Running the Light. And he has a whole chapter in there about a comedian who has to.
Are you getting the most out of your job? Could that whole thing that you do for 8 hours a day be better than it is? Good question to ask yourself from time to time. Maybe you could do something about it. Whether you're looking for a new opportunity or want to make yourself a stronger candidate for promotion, how you present yourself is key to taking the next step. The University of Toronto Rotman School of Management is one of the best schools in Canada and the world. It's ranked number 17 for open enrollment executive education by the Financial Times. Rotman's unique virtual executive presence program equips you with tools and tips to engage and influence others. And don't we all want to do that? Don't we want to engage and influence others? Rotman has designed this comprehensive virtual program to work around your current schedule. With Rotman's executive presence, you can balance working from home and being there for your loved ones with building your emotional intelligence and making connections with peers across different industries. So visit uoft.me/executive presence. That's uoft.me/executive presence. That's P-R-E-S-E-N-C-E. To learn more and apply. Class starts September 15th, so start your application today to save your seat. That's uoft.me/executive presence. Rotman, here's where it changes. You know what I'm tired of? Deciding what to make for dinner. And I've got a feeling that a bunch of you out there feel the same way. But Green Chef makes eating well easy and affordable, with a range of recipes to suit any diet or preference. Really, it's easier than ever to eat well, to make home-cooked dinners, to have options that work around your lifestyle. Green Chef's the number one meal kit for eating well. They've got premium ingredients, they've got organic vegetables, like high-quality proteins. Those are a given at Green Chef. They take care of your meal planning, your grocery shopping, even some of the food prep, and it gives you more time to tackle back to school season. I really love making these. I've made these meals with my wife, with my teenage kids. It's kind of fun. Nothing's too hard, so it's an easy way to get them in the kitchen, get them helping out. How about a spicy chicken and veggie stir fry? How about some roasted garlic and veggie flatbreads? Jamaican fried rice? Spicy cauliflower with tahini? Are you getting hungry? It's so varied, it's so fresh, the ingredients are so good. None of these are too hard to make, but you also don't feel like you just, popped a frozen dinner in the microwave. You get the satisfaction of cooking dinner without having to shop for it, without having to plan. So look, go to greenchef.com/deadpilots100 and use the code deadpilots100 to get $100 off. And that includes free shipping. That's greenchef.com/deadpilots100 and code deadpilots100 for $100 off.
Are you feeling elevated levels of anxiety? Do you quake uncontrollably, even thinking about watching cable news? Do you have disturbing nightmares, only to realize it's 2 in the afternoon and you're up? If you've experienced one or more of these symptoms, you may have FNO, news overload. Fortunately, there's treatment. Hi, I'm Dave Holmes, host of Troubled Waters. Troubled Waters helps fight FNO. That's because Troubled Waters stimulates your joy zone. On Troubled Waters, two comedians will battle one another for pop culture supremacy. So join me, Dave Holmes, for two doses of Troubled Waters a month. The cure for your news overload. Available on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Our buddy, Denver comedian Sam Talent, mm-hmm. wrote this great book about a road dog comedian that was, pretty well received, called Running the Light. And he has a whole chapter in there about a comedian who has to his opening act, unbeknownst to him, is a duck shitting on a bingo board or whatever. It's duck shit bingo. And just that's the kind of thing you get into. But point is, it's real. And it's relatively common in different forms.
Right.
Yeah.
But that's set in the West, right? That scene happens, I think, in Kansas or New Mexico.
Somewhere out that way. Yeah.
But it's common, but it doesn't end up in TV shows about the South, which are often written by people not from the South, faking it, who wouldn't know about that is a common thing. Right. And I think almost as soon as it was brought up, the idea of like Corey thinks he's great at it.
Yeah.
Was the thing that I just remember like, okay, now.
And
that,
I'm 99% sure you go, I'm good at that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was about to say, that's either something I actually said in the room or also very likely Drew went, this is the type of thing that Corey would think he'd be good at. And I probably went like, well, yeah, I would
be good at that.
Are you saying I ain't good?
Yeah.
Because I have talked many a times about how I'm really, really, really good at roulette.
I know.
And I am.
So does my wife.
I am.
And so does my wife. And she is too.
I know.
So that, I remember being, after I had like, got, I'd been telling people about the reenactment story. Then I think I remember something was like, okay, listen to, there's this cow shit bingo. Yeah. And one of the characters thinks he's really good at it.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
And even reading that stuff where you're out there in the
pasture, yeah, taking notes.
Taking notes and yeah, like following.
Just like reading the greens.
And refusing to talk to Trey, too.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I remember all these things coming together. I remember as we were finding, like, I think, like, where we found, like, okay, Drew's just exaggerating some things. Like, you're kind of wanted to have the right shirt for when Trey's coming back and all that stuff like that.
I wore these shorts for you, Andrew. Yeah. I wanted to look cool.
As those attitudes are the things that get me excited when I'm writing something. It's just like, okay, that, you know, Drew's got kind of like a man crush on Trey is something we could do jokes for 10 seasons
for sure
about. You know, right. That is whatever.
Corey being a dipshit. We got locked and loaded.
Forever.
I have got to, at some point, I've got to ask you about a particular story that I remember from the writer's room having to do with Corey.
How about now?
Let's do it now. So I tell the story all the time.
I'm
just curious whether you even remember it or not. So we have a very long running thing in our relationship where I've always told him that everything about him is exactly the way that it should be. I'm like, you're perfect exactly the way you are. So what that means is when he starts trying to improve his life generally, like, you know, get a little healthier or whatever, I'm like, no, stop. What are you doing? You're perfect. You are the way you should be, right? And this is a long-running thing with us. So one day we're in the writer's room and you're like talking to Noah, your assistant, kind of off to the side because it was like lunchtime sort of. And this same subject got brought up with me and Corey, as it often does. And he was getting fired up about it, as he often does. He's like, all right, we'll see what you think when I drop about 50. And that's how he said it. And you were like, that perked you up. You're like, wait, hold on. What'd you just say? And Corey's like, I told him that he say when I dropped about 50, you know, and you were like, 50 what? 50 pounds. And you went, oh, you can't lose any weight. You're like, you went, you're borderline not fat enough. And I was like, I'm fist pumping.
I'm not doing a goddamn rewrite.
I tell people that all the time. It's one of my favorite things that ever happened.
Yeah. I think we were just like, wait, we're writing all these fat jokes.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And then I still maintain, though, and I'll maintain it right now. I was like, but you don't understand. Like, if I lost all that weight, I would still look fat on TV. Like, I would still be the fat guy. And just, yeah, Trey was never going to have it. And of course, yeah, you didn't want to do a rewrite.
What I loved about it is that it kind of validated both of them. It validates Trey. See, I told you, and it validates Corey, where it's like, you only see me as a vehicle for jokes.
Yeah, yes, exactly.
And then to be fair, you know, there was no body shaming. No. We weren't exactly. They were appetite jokes. You had appetite for pork products.
I mean, hell, I wrote some of them. Yeah, you know.
You had your bedroom ham.
Yeah. That was your joke. Of course it was. You know.
I think when that came up, when the, like, pork product salesman, like, you know, that just seemed like, all right, that will also provide jokes forever.
Early on in the pilot, when I signed an autograph for that kid, and he goes, thank you, Mr. Pig, man. Yeah. That's one of the funniest lines in the whole thing. Yeah. It's so stupid, but it's hilarious.
So we, you know, so this looks like us in a room at in the old animation building on the Disney lot day after day, with lots of snacks and coming up with all this stuff. And I guess we finally got an outline for basically what people heard approved, which we wrote, which was this draft, which was pretty. I think this was like the first draft we submitted even to the studio, I think, or close to it.
I can't remember the order because I know there were different versions of the same story. There was one where I kidnapped the cow.
Yep.
Yeah.
There was
that. And yeah. I feel like that was a later this one, I think.
Yeah. I mean, this was the one where I stand by this draft.
Yeah. Me too.
Yeah.
I just feel like everyone's characters are clear. All the women's characters are clear. The story is just fun. And I still like hearing that moment where you guys kind of make up, where Trey talks to Betsy the cow. Yeah.
That's my favorite line. I say Trey, Betsy told me what you said. Yeah.
I just, you know.
I'm borderline embarrassed to say this, but I almost got choked up during the
three. I mean, I was crushing it, but yeah, you're right.
I get a little, it's like a sweet friendship moment.
Yeah.
And I think what it's hard to get there in a pilot, but I think the history that you guys actually have and how well you know each other and all that was able to be infused into it a bit. So it feels like characters that, you know, at least, you know, to me, it seems like these are real friendships.
Well, again, not to be cheesy, but the line Katie says about New York, you know, Corey and I both lived in New York. That's exactly how I felt about it. Where it was like, yeah, no, it's not home. There's a lot I love about it, but no one will ever have my back like you just did. I'm going to get choked up right now, man. Yeah. Move on.
Yeah. It was that feeling of like, this is home. This is a kind of a screwed up place. And there's a lot of things that all the characters have problems with about it. But
yeah. And in that same sequence when she's like, yeah, she goes to bat for her and she's like, don't you actually believe all this stuff too? She's like, yeah, but like, we're family. I can say that. Like that.
Yeah, she ain't
I identify
family.
With that so much because like where I'm from, oh my God, I'm, you know, and these guys know this too, like we're the stupid elitist Hollywood queers that blah, 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 blah. But if any of my buddies who say that about me heard someone that wasn't them say it, oh, they would hit them with a 2x4. They're like, you can't, he's our queer. You know what I mean?
Just the 2x4 they have on them at all
times. Yeah, at all times. Yeah. That their mamaw signed before she died.
See, you let us do that episode one. And then on episode three, after they started trusting us, we could have told them to stop being racist, Hollywood, which is what they wanted us to do from the word jump.
Yeah.
But there were lots of, they had lots of issues with this, with this script. And I think they were like, they were fixated on what are Trey and Katie bringing to the town?
Right?
That was like their thing. Like they need to be bringing something to the town, even though it just seemed like, well, they are. And I still love that moment where like Wally and the townspeople are like into the Festival for Tiny Films.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that Corey's been like, you know, I still love that. I think I remember you pitching this, that railroad is just like, what's the
line? It's just over there collecting snakes. I love that.
Collecting snakes. And then I think we...
So many snake jokes.
Do you think they saw... This is maybe getting way too esoteric. Do you think they saw themselves? Those are the only two characters they identified with, so that's why they wanted more?
Probably.
I felt that in the past with some of the projects you've had, the notes you've shared with us about the experiences you've had, so that's why I thought that.
Yeah, I can relate, because these two feel like they're basically New Yorkers or something.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like, they don't feel as Southern as the other people, so I'm going to fixate on that.
Yeah, they need to have bigger wins.
And they had to, like, be saviors or something for this town.
Exactly.
Which never, you know.
Yeah, they did fixate on the town part of it for sure. Because I remember we were talking... At the time, they had a show on that had to do that was kind of about a guy saving his town, basically.
Oh, they had the mayor.
Yeah, right. That had like just come out or whatnot. And that may have nothing to do with this. I don't know. But I remember us talking about it because they did, for some reason, they kept bringing up the town. Yeah. Like fixing the town, or like improving the town or whatever was like a thing they were majorly fixated on.
Yeah, and it's like, well, if we do that in the pilot, then what else are we
I know, and I think it was, ironically, it was a thing that made the mayor not be able to work as a series, because it was like in the pilot of that, it's like everyone gets together and cleans up this dirty park. And then were you supposed to do that every week?
Yeah.
Like you're doing some heroic thing. You can't do that week in and week out. And we, you know, I think that city manager job was functioning to get you back home. I mean, the main thing it was just doing was just like you wanted to come back home, but your wife was kind of dragging her feet, and that was always going to be a source of conflict. But you wanted to be with your buddies, and your buddies wanted you to stay, and it was just a thing that made sense for you to do. But it was never our intention, like, to be a show about civics.
Right.
That was about city government. It wasn't, you know, even like Parks and Rec level. Really.
Right.
It
do
was
you think
not about
even
that.
Subconsciously everyone was caught up in the post-Trump stuff, and that was part of that?
I like, think it
no,
was.
We have to learn lessons about these people.
I think probably. I think everything. I think that was infusing everything, like everyone still sort of reeling and trying to make sense of that and having to feel like that had to be a message.
If we're going
to
have rednecks on TV, it can't just be that they're funny. There has to be something else to it. We can't just let these people do a thing.
We have to own a little bit of that in terms of the stuff we had been known for.
Sure, absolutely.
Right. But I think we, you know, set out to have that be subtler than it was in the rest of your stuff. This was not the liberal rednecks show.
Right. Yeah, I mean, hell, we couldn't. I mean, there's no way we could do that for ABC. Like, as much as they want, it's like, that's still a network. This is still something that they're going to want everyone to see, regardless of how they feel about things.
It's also because I remember in the one I did with M-Bomb for ABC, which was just the year before this, I remember one of the first times I went in there and talked to them, they very diplomatically but made it clear that they wanted that toned way down, the liberal redneck type of thing. And it's like, part of me in my head was like, okay, well, I'm not entirely sure what I'm doing here if you don't want me to do any of that. But it's, they have this, it's like they want kind of that. Like they have a vague notion of like doing some of that, but full on doing that freaks them out.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so they don't know really what that even is at the end of the day. And I don't either. Yeah.
They seem to be reading everything we gave them very nervously.
Yeah, right.
Everything about it just made them vaguely nervous.
I think it's because we came out of the gate with slavery and Mud Boy.
Yeah. It could be. It could be.
I think it's like they go, so we can't just have this be a show where it's a bunch of rednecks explicitly going out of their way to say, hey, racism is bad and hey, blah, 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 blah. But then they were like, okay, well then why don't we just show a bunch of rednecks who are good people and not racist? And they're like, well, that's not realistic.
It's also
we can't do that.
That's another conversation I had so many times with like various executive types, whatever, over the years. It's like, Just have characters that are like super Southern, or whatever, but also just don't hate gay people, don't go to church or whatever. It's like I'm good with that. We can just do that.
That'd be awesome.
But you don't have to point at it. You know what I mean? Like that's the
just
thing.
Show
like,
an example.
It's like, are we going to explain why this guy isn't a raging lunatic at any point? You know what I mean? It's like, no, he just isn't. He's not all like that.
Right.
Do you think that's getting easier with some of the other things? Because it seems like that conversation has gotten easier with some of the other places we've been. Of course, those are just production companies, not networks.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, this was your third
network pilot.
Network pilot,
and it still is. I haven't done another network pilot since then.
Well, even if you did, it would still be the third.
Yeah,
unless you went back in time and did one before this.
You are right. That didn't make any sense what I just said.
I knew
it's the third and also the last one that I did. The most recent network thing I did.
Yeah. So they gave us a note about the town, and I think then we came up with this thing where it was like Katie was painting an Instagram.
Yes, I remember that. Yep. And there was going to be a special hashtag, and it was going to be used to promote tourism. People can stand in front of it and take a picture.
Yeah, because she was like an artist. I think we changed her from a yoga instructor to an artist so that she was able to like do this Instagram wall. And it happened at Heifer Day. And I think maybe I definitely were just like, I love this patty walk. We'll try and give you what you wanted, but also because I think they wanted to like get rid of the patty walk.
Oh, they did.
And
it's kind of ironic.
Yeah.
And we were fighting for it.
Yeah. It was life imitating art.
Yeah.
So I think we managed to hold on to that, but at the same time, also
we did because that's the one that had me. I stole the cow in that one and brought it drunk.
You brought it back,
which was the heroic gesture, I think, the returning of the cow or something. I don't remember, but either way, I know the paddy walk was still in it because that's what all that cow shit was about.
Yes, but there was cows, but there was also an Instagram wall that was going to bring people to the town.
And you know.
That was a draft that I think finally went to the powers that be, and which they politely declined to make into a television show.
I'll never forget that call. We all hopped on the line, and right they're like, all right, we're holding for whoever. And as soon as they said that, you just chimed in. You go, this isn't going to be good, guys.
Yeah,
and we're like, I was like, huh?
What?
Yeah, well, because it was the studio. That's how you know if it's the studio, it's bad.
Yeah,
and I knew that. Yeah, so for those listening, that's how I think I've talked about this on the podcast before, but that's how it goes. Like, you're in January, February when decisions are being made. You get a call that says, please hold for.
Yeah.
And if it's not please hold for the network executive, it's please hold for the studio executive, you could basically hang up right then.
Yeah.
Right. Because you know what they're saying, and there's never going to be any satisfying information about the why.
Right.
Why they're
It passing. Doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. It's just like, it's a pattern.
It's a whole bunch of
what was happening with you guys were the phone call.
Yeah.
And I just didn't want you to be.
Oh no, you did the right thing.
I didn't want you to be excited for any longer than.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, sure enough, it was. I don't. And I have no recollection of if anything was said other than. Wasn't that the one that was just like they just passed on all of our stuff or something like that? Wasn't it just like a blanket pass?
Pretty much. Like, yeah.
Maybe it was that, but.
Pretty sure I stopped listening after you told me.
Totally, it's not going to be good. But it was, you know, I think, you know, it's so tough in doing these things because I did feel like that final draft was not as good as this draft. Right. And yet, you know, what are you supposed to do? You know, if you just stick to your guns and say, like, no, we're not changing anything. We're not doing these notes.
Right.
That... I mean, the fact is, you know, you probably end up in the same place, right. And at least you know, would be handing in your, you know, the one you believe in the most.
Right.
But it just is so hard to do that because it just always is going to feel like, well, if we do these changes.
Right. Well, also, isn't part of it that you need people on the other side who are kind of backing you, like your champions or whatever, and sort of make the case for you to their bosses and whatnot. So you want to give those people what they want because then they'll be more likely to do that for you.
Yes. And then I also, and then my next thought of that is like, does that matter?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
It's frankly a depressing prospect to the fact that you have to have that on your mind during the exchange. I realize you can get into like very cheesy, like it's all about the art. But even if it's about selling the best product, if that's what it's about, very cynically, now I'm having to worry about your feelings, Mr. or Mrs. Executive, when you go back. That's just such a depressing thing because I have no skills at that personally.
Yeah. I mean, it's there's no kind of way around it. And I just feel like, I don't think this is that draft that we, it wasn't like it was bad. I feel like we found a way to and there were found good jokes and whatever, but it definitely was, to my mind, I think for all of us, not as good as it, but it's just an unavoidable thing when you're in the situation that you're always going to be like, all right, let's try and execute these notes. Because there's also in my mind what goes through is like, am I just being lazy? Am I just like not wanting to take this note because I just don't feel like writing more things?
Well, a lot of what they usually are is it's always like, we're at a page limit basically already. They want something added in and could give a shit less about like the jokes that are going to, it's always like some additional thing that's going to come at the expense of like something funny. You know what I mean? Like that type of thing happens a lot, which is also hard to stomach if you're, trying to write a comedy script.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like we care, all the stuff we care the most about.
Was the funny part.
They don't care. Like, they care about
all that heart shit, that was for them. Yeah, like, right.
Even though I like the heart shit.
No, I do too. I do too. But like, until they made me, I didn't really have that gear. Like I would have been comfortable doing It's Always Sunny with all three of us, which has absolutely zero heart whatsoever and just Mud Boy Till I Die. But yeah, the heart stuff
this
was
episode.
Mud Boy Till I Die. Yeah.
And the stuff that we would spend just a full day on, like, whatever the bug tussle joke, like the women's prison bug tussle joke, which is probably it doesn't matter. That joke definitely does not matter to whether you get picked
up or not. Of course.
Like what we would obsess about.
Yeah, of course.
You know, endlessly. I do think the other thing that happened, which happens all the time, is there was a regime change.
Yeah.
Right. The head of the network we sold this to was not there when the pickups were happening.
Which is so never good.
And so we didn't really know what, the new president's mandate was, but it might not have included, let's try and get some Southern characters on the air.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think there was like, bless this mess.
Wasn't that the year? I could be wrong about this.
Roseanne.
Wasn't that the year they brought Roseanne back?
Oh, yeah,
it was.
Maybe it was.
I'm pretty sure it was. And I remember thinking at the time that there's no way that was good.
No,
they're not going to. Yeah, because they. Right.
They're like, they're going to let them do this. And like, of course, if I'm an executive, am I going with us or am I going to reboot some incredibly great IP? Of course, you're going to go with
them. But we wouldn't have probably not gone on a crazy racist tirade on Twitter.
That's
a
few
months into the show.
That's true. I don't know if they kept turning on my goddamn ideas. I might have.
Also, and this is something we're going to run into, and there's, you're just banging your head against the wall. We're not Roseanne. Wasn't that set in the Midwest?
But it's like working class, working class white people.
Right. Dude, I was I was in a Lyft yesterday, and my driver was like, "Hey, where are you from?" And I go, "Close to Chattanooga, Tennessee." And he goes, "Ah, Midwest." And I go, "No, actually, the South." And he goes, "Ah, you know." And I was like, "Yeah, I know. What are you gonna do?"
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean that is. I think that goes in the same bucket, Roseanne and you guys.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
Your network exec. That's too similar.
And trust me, I mean, our people love Roseanne because it is. It's working class. Yeah.
We did a read. Of it.
Yeah.
You know, I think that was just like having done these Dead Pilots reads for so long. I was just like, let's just do that. Let's just let them hear. Because also part of it was as much as we tried to phonetically write this.
Yeah.
Right. It's just there's no, you know, your voices are your voices. And I think it was just like, oh, maybe they can hear what this actually sounds like. So we did that read and sent that. I have no idea whether the head of the network ever actually listened to that recording. I'm sure I have it.
Yeah. I'd like to hear that.
Yeah, I can send it to you.
Yeah, that was fun.
I kind of forgot, even though I hadn't done it with the ones previously, but I kind of forgot that that was a sort of like novel thing that you thought of like kind of late in the process. You were like, hey, what if we did this? You know, in my head, it was like that was just a step that you do, but it's not necessarily.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure other people have done it, but that was the first time I had really heard of like, you know, doing it, and people seemed kind of like
that's how I would prefer it if I was the one having to do it. Like,
let me just
put it in my ears and
in the car and see if I laugh at it.
Yeah, for sure.
And it was unique in that it had the three male leads like very available to do it. You know, I think a lot of times it was just like me writing a script for a bunch of people, you know, whatever. I mean, you could come up with the actors, but it's different for, you know, in this case, it was you guys. I feel like we definitely, we gave it our all.
Yeah,
we sure did.
We sure did.
And
it was a lot of fun too.
Oh my God. I mean,
having a sort of like mini writer's room.
Oh yeah. I mean,
through the process of doing this was awesome.
I think back on those times very fondly. I mean, I still tell all my friends, like, I used to work on Dopey Drive.
I definitely look back fondly. I definitely remember though being stressed, like feeling, you know, building it up in my mind. It's the fucking Disney lot. And obviously these are my friends, but I wanted you guys to think I was funny. I very much wanted you to like me. I remember thinking like we'd write a joke or come up with a concept, and I remember being like, shit, can I pull that off? Can I do that, you know, as an actor? And like that kind of stuff, I had to like get over that or try to quickly, you know?
Right. Yeah. I mean, if it had gone, it's like, that would have been a big deal. Suddenly you're just starring in an ABC. Yeah.
Oh, that was another thing that we talked about all the time is like as we were writing it, there was still this thing looming over us of just like, you know, they could recast us, you know, like we could still. And I just early on was just like, you know what? That's fine. I love this show. If they tell me you can't play it, but you can still write it, I will.
Yeah, I would rather. Obviously, that would suck to get recast as yourself in the pilot you wrote. But I thought about that with every one of them I ever had.
Did you figure out who
John Hamm?
What? No. It's funny. I recently wrote a spec script in which that happens to me. I get recast in a show about myself. So that's how much I've thought about it. But also, it's like if that. Like you just said, I always felt like obviously I don't want that to happen.
Yeah.
But I would rather that happen and this show get made and I'm still one of the creative driving forces behind it and writing on it and stuff than just to, like, that's not a hill I would die on. No. That would be upsetting to me, but, like, I could totally live with that if it meant that the show lived on and I was still sculpting it.
For sure.
Of course.
That's more important to me than actually being in it.
I had two dreams that you guys didn't get recast, but I did. And it was always because, like, I felt like at least I convinced myself that that was because we'd kind of pitched me as the ladies guy. And it was like, man, I'm too old. I'm too bald. I'm a little too fat. Like, it's not going to work. I'm going to have to lose a bunch of weight. Yeah. Like, I'm going to have to figure this out or whatever, you know, or I'm going to get recast. So I had two nightmares like that. Now, that would have been stressful for a variety of reasons. I think the idea
was it was such a backwater town that even you.
Yeah. Yes, even you.
I think we wrote that in there. One of those, like, how's this guy? As an aside, direct to camera. Listen, here's what you need to know.
You got
to
understand.
You ever heard the concept of a Tennessee 10?
Yeah.
I mean, I loved like that little room that we had, which is these days, that's a writer's room. On a lot of shows. Right. Like four people. Oh, that's now like, you know, with the budgets, that's like a writer's room. But, that was a great time. And I feel like I stand by this script. Do you guys, I mean, was it fun to hear it and read it?
Absolutely. I loved getting, of course, I read over it when we sent it back out. You know, I wasn't going to go into it just like totally cold, but still actually doing it out loud and hearing it done out loud by everybody else, you know, as we really got into it and got rolling, I was having a great time with it. And I thought there were a lot of times where I was having to like try to keep myself from cracking up because I had, you know, a line to do or whatever, but I was really enjoying it.
Yeah, it would have been a good show.
I accidentally read the last one we sent them. I was just like, oh, that's what we're going to do. So some of it was fresh, and I was like very pleasantly surprised at how much better I felt like that one was.
Yeah, the one we wanted to do.
No, I you know, it's always hard when you hear something like, for me, it's like I'm always finding fault, but this one I was just like, I like this script. I like a lot of the little details. I like when we're at Corey, you know, your house, and Amber's just talking about her wedding registry. Like the shot, just like those little details.
Yeah.
Just were really.
Oh, it was a character building masterclass. This script,
because it was just, you know, it's a lot of just like, tell me about, like, let's dig, like, tell me about you, or tell me about these women, like, let's try and take everything from real stuff. So we're just like, you know, because I knew if I was just going to make it up, it was going to be Southern cliches.
Right.
So it had to be like from the real thing.
Which in our,
a lot of times,
it just sounds like a Southern cliche. Yeah. Because I remember with like a lot, some of their early on notes was like that Paige seemed like a bit much. Yeah. And like Trey had to constantly go, what I wrote in here, look at this text she just sent me. It's just that. It's just that.
Since I exploded all those tree stumps. It's just like, it's gotten so big, it takes me twice as long to check them for ticks now. Well, it was great. It was really fun. And
Thanks for letting us bring it back to life.
Absolutely, yeah. It was awesome.
I really hope you enjoyed that. I think I managed to avoid slipping into a bad Southern accent for the most part. Dead Pilot Society is produced by me and my co-host Ben Blacker, and our indefatigable associate producer, Noah Findling. Hey, if you like this show, please leave us a review on Apple Podcast. It really helps. Tell a friend. Who do you know who might like this show? Tell a friend about us. Follow us on social media. Find out all the latest. We're on Twitter at Dead Pilots Pod and on Instagram at Dead Pilots Society. All right, everybody. Keep finding a way to help someone. Keep being nice to yourself. Wear a mask when appropriate, and everybody stay safe out there.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.